Hey, friendly reminder, this podcast is not for kids or people who have a stick up their ass.
Friday, 5:58 p.m.
I'm sleeping with my best friend's husband.
I think my uncle killed someone in his suicide.
I am a sugar baby.
I'm a soccer mom addicted to Adderall.
I think my sister is actually my uncle's kid.
My husband bought his hooker a car whenever I was helping
him. I was living with my husband.
What's your secret? Welcome back to another week of Beyond the Secret. My name is Ace Fanning. And before we get into this week's episode, I just want to give you a warning. Today's episodes, both here and on Patreon, deal with the matter of sexual abuse of children. And I just ask that if you are in a place where you are not ready to hear conversations about that, then maybe it's best for you to skip these episodes. You know, I think that it is important that we always try to protect ourselves, and maybe not listening to this episode is what you need to do in order to do just that. So, proceed with caution. Also, as always, I'm here to remind you that if you are missing the weekly updates to Beyond the Secret, you can still get them on Patreon. It's $10 a month for weekly content. If I do say so myself, it is absolutely worth it. There is a link in the show notes if you want to join, but if not, it's okay. I mean, it's your loss, but it's okay. Also, before we get into the episode, just here to remind you that if you want to leave a 5-star review of Beyond the Secret, I would love that. Anything less, please don't. Please don't tell me about your concerns or anything like that. Thank you so much. Okay, on to this week's story. If you've listened to Beyond the Secret for a while, then you will probably know that the episode Missing My Suicidal Son, that is like the episode for me. I feel like if I never made another episode after that one, I would know that I had set out to do what it is I wanted to do with this podcast. Like, I feel like it is something very important. It's something I feel like I hold very close to my heart, and it is truly the episode that means the most to me. And so when I say this, I want you to know just where I'm coming from, because I want to let you know that this is another one of those stories for me. This story is big and has a lot of meaning, and I think that it is such an important story. And so if you are in a place where you can listen to it, I really want you to hear it, because it is powerful, and I have a lot of feelings about it, but it's hard because I don't want to give anything away. So I will stop talking now and leave you to it. This week's secret, To Catch a Predator, part one. Tell me about yourself.
I like to think that I'm a pretty outgoing person. I like to make people laugh, but I'm also kind of an asshole. And I identify as an asshole because it excuses my inappropriate behaviors. And if I ever do something that's embarrassing or whatever, I can just say, yeah, well, I'm an asshole. So it kind of excuses myself. At the same time, I do think that I'm kind of compassionate with some people. And yeah, I'm pretty outgoing. And that's about the surface level of who I am.
What kind of kid would you say you were growing up?
That's a good question. I think I was a kid who was desperate for attention, absolutely screaming for an identity, looking for approval, the class clown, trying to basically get the approval from teachers, friends, anybody, because I didn't quite have that approval in my home base. I felt like when I was at home, I was always shut down. So then when I got to go to school or be away from my home, I was constantly trying to be somebody who people liked. It was a burden.
How did you first get introduced to this group that you were a part of?
So my mom was a senior leader for the organization that she worked at, and somebody who she hired had a brother that ran this youth club. And so she learned about it, and it turns out that my mom had been involved in this club when she was a child as well. And the club is called the 4-H. It's not very popular from my experiences and conversations with people in Arizona. However, it does exist. And so when my mom learned that this person had a relationship with somebody who was a leader of this club, she thought, oh, this would be really cool to get my son involved. I had a great experience when I was a kid in the 4-H club. So let me go ahead and get, you know, my son involved in this, and this will be really great for him. She's thinking to herself, he loves animals, and this 4-H group revolved around animals. And so she worked with the person who she hired to get in contact with that person's brother who ran the 4-H club, and then got me enlisted, if you will, or involved.
Give me a little breakdown on what the 4-H club is, because my only reference with it is the Dixie Chicks song Goodbye Earl, where it says both members of the 4-H club. So I have no idea.
It's very funny that the only reference to your knowledge of the 4-H is from a Dixie Chicks song, because that's probably the most appropriate knowledge based for the 4-H. It is totally a like Midwestern, I don't know how to describe it. Like, people go to farms, and it's essentially teaching youth and young children how to take care of animals, how to take care of, or how to handle just different elements of agriculture. So that could look like caring for a goat. And then at the same time, another 4-H club might be learning how to harvest corn. It's kind of spread out, but it's very much agricultural based. You know, my 4-H club specifically revolved around pygmy goats, which are these little, they're pretty cute. They're these little goats that are, I don't know, like they have these personalities. And as a 4-H club member, I would show up, I would participate in this class on how to show a goat. So think like a dog show, except far less distinguished. We're walking around in a circle with goats, and I'm dressed up in this little 4-H outfit. I've got a white button-up long-sleeve shirt with black slacks that have sawdust all over the knees, because you have to kneel down to show the goat. And then the signature 4-H component of the outfit or uniform is this little green ribbon, and that shows that, oh, this kid's part of the 4-H. So you would go to all these different events, bring your goats, show the goats. There was a judge, and then based off of your knowledge on the animal, your ability to show the animal, you were then placed in, you know, an order, first, second, third, whatever. Also, I don't know if you've ever been to like a county fair or state fair, and you walk around, and I'm thinking back to the Arizona State Fair, there's all these different barns in downtown Phoenix at the state county fairgrounds that have these animals, and you walk through. So I would be a part of that. We'd bring our goats there, and then we would participate in these county fair. It's a very, very Dixie Chicks thing to do.
What was your first impression of 4-H club and your 4-H club leader?
So I mentioned earlier when you asked me what was I like as a child. So initially, I loved the 4-H. One, because I got to get away from my house. I got to get away from the environment where I did not feel accepted. And I had this newfound opportunity to be somebody who people might like. So I was with a large group. There's probably like 15 to 20 kids that were involved in my group. And I got to have the opportunity to get the approval of people who led the group. So for instance, like the person who taught me everything that I knew, I was approved by him. So my first impression was, I love animals. Goats are goofy, but they're still fun little animals. So I got the opportunity to work with them. And then I got the opportunity to be somebody who people might like in this new atmosphere. So I liked it at first. And I enjoyed the opportunity to be approved by the person who led the group.
What exactly was going on at home?
So I don't know who my biological father is. My mother had me when she was very young. She was 19. She had me out of wedlock. I don't know who my biological father is because she doesn't know who my biological father is. So she married her husband when I was about, I think, 3 or 4. And then they quickly had their child, so my half-brother, who's about 4 years younger than me. And there was this dynamic between my stepfather and me that was pretty hostile. You know, he definitely favored my younger brother. And so there was like this constant battle between my younger brother and my stepdad and myself and my mom. So there was definitely abuse, physical, verbal, to everybody from my stepfather. And he didn't spare his own son, my younger brother. So everybody was at risk of being abused. And it happened often, except particularly a little more often towards me. And the fact that my mom continued to allow me to be in that situation, that was challenging for me, because not only was I rejected from my biological father by just simply not existing, I was rejected by my stepfather. And I also felt like I was rejected by my own mother, because for her to allow this to continuously occur felt like she was rejecting my worth. And that sucked. So that's why I was on this mission to seek the approval from anybody and anyone anytime I got the chance to leave the house.
What was your club leader's personality like?
He was soft-spoken. He was charismatic. He was empathetic. He knew that I had a shitty life at home. And so he saw that as this opportunity to give me a chance to, like, you know, shine, if you will. That's how the common term is groom. You know, through his grooming process, he made me feel special. He made me feel approved. He made me feel like I was worth something. And he validated all of my emotions and feelings about at home. You know, there's a lot of kids that complain and bitch and have problems with their at-home life, but in reality, it's just because they're being a little bitch. He validated every complaint that I have. And I'm sure that if I were to walk back the path of me being at home, I'm sure there's times where it wasn't really as bad as I portray it. And it was just me being an angry child who wasn't maybe getting their way. However, when I was at the 4-H club with this leader, he validated. He's like, yeah, that's fucked up. You know, you're so much better than that. You don't deserve to be treated like this. He would tell me, you're so amazing. You know, you're an amazing kid. Like, this is great. And yeah, that's kind of what his personality was. He would listen to me. He would understand. He would validate my emotions and my feelings. And then he would encourage me.
What all did you know about him as just a person outside of the club?
So I didn't know that much about him. Frankly, I didn't know anything about him. Except I did know that his social status was significantly different than what I was used to. I knew that he didn't have like his own car or vehicle, and he didn't have a very great job. I'm pretty sure that this role that he had with 4-H was a volunteer status. I just knew that he wasn't some profound or exceptionally successful individual in society. However, I'm also a child, so that stuff didn't matter to me. And it doesn't matter to me now, but it didn't matter to me then, especially because he would hear me. He would listen to me. And more importantly, he approved of me. That's all. Like, I don't care who you were at that stage in my life. So long as I had your approval, that was enough for me.
How old were you at this time?
I've had to have this conversation quite a few times, actually, about recounting the timeline and my age. And the one way that I can always pinpoint when this started was based off of my cell phone that I had at the time. Because I remember I was in fifth grade when my mom got us flip phone camera phones. And so that was kind of a big deal. And the reason I pinpoint it and associate it with the flip phone camera phone is because that's how it all started. It started with me taking pictures of myself and sending pictures to him. And yeah, that's how it all started. So I was in fifth grade, which I think puts me at about 9 years old.
And how old was he?
You know, after all this time, I still haven't done the research to find out exactly how old he was. But if I had to guess, he was in his early 20s, maybe 20. So he was at least about 10 to 12 years older than me.
When do you feel like was the first time where he started to maybe test the waters or cross a line with you?
So at the 4-H club meetings that we would go to, we would have to go and tend to our animals. So we owned these pygmy goats. Or I suppose my mom owned these pygmy goats on my behalf, and we boarded them at this property in Glendale, Arizona. And so I would show up to this property. That's where the 4-H club would take place. We would be having our regular curriculum, and then there'd come an opportunity where we have to go get the animals from their pens or, you know, wherever they were being kept. And so this guy would take me and we would walk off away from where the group was taking place and we'd go get our animals. And he would assist us with putting leashes on them, removing them from their pens, and then we would bring them back to where the regular 4-H club was taking place. And in these moments, he started to kind of put his hand on me, caress me, if you will, not really sexually, just it almost felt like compassionate. Like maybe what a dad would do to his son, you know, like walking him to get his animal. So that's where it first started, is was, you know, hands on the lower back, lifting me up over fences, you know, and not high fences, you know, like think of like little pony walls or pony fences where a goat couldn't get out. He would lift me over the fence and, you know, his hands would be in strange places. You know, when I envision lifting a child up over a fence, I pick them up underneath their armpits and I throw them over the fence and let them land on their feet. He would kind of coddle me, and there was hands on my ass and things of that nature to lift me over the fence. So a very different way of lifting a child over the fence than I envision how I would lift a child over the fence, if that makes sense.
Do you remember if at the time you thought that was what he was doing was weird, or do you feel like that sense of weirdness came as you became older and you realized that that isn't how you would interact with a child?
1000%, I did not know that this was out of the norm. In fact, I thought that this was how it should happen. Like for once in my life, there was a male who was older than me, and he was, I never experienced physical touch, physical emotion, physical compassion from another male, you know, not having a father, not having a dependable or reliable stepfather. So I thought, wow, this is cool. This is how it's supposed to happen, you know. My understanding of what was actually happening occurred over the next several years. I had no idea that I was being abused, groomed, or sexually abused until I even learned what sex was. I was in fifth grade. I didn't know really what sex was. And then when I learned what sex was, I learned that sex is between a man and a woman. So I definitely didn't have sex. And my I call it the discovery phase. It occurred over the next several years.
How did things progress from these small interactions of rubbing your shoulders, lifting you over the fence. How did he move things along?
I was abused for 2 years, but there are three counts that I remember vividly. And the first one is the first time that something wildly inappropriate occurred. And I didn't think that I would be experiencing these nerves or anxious feelings that I'm feeling right now, because I've talked about this 1,000 times, but I guess it still does provoke anxiety. So forgive me if I'm short-winded or whatever here, but the first time we really crossed that boundary of, you know, shoulder, hand to shoulder, hand to ass, looking me over the fence, was the time that he drove me home from the, it was the Maricopa County Fair. The senior leader of the 4-H club that we were in, she allowed us to stay after hours. And so we had a whole day at the county fair. We showed all our animals. We had to clean our animals, clean up the area, whatever. The county fair admissions had long been closed, so it was after hours, and this individual offered to drive me home. My mom was not there anymore. She would have come pick me up, but this person got approval to take me home by our senior leader. I remember that he had a white truck. It was like a Mitsubishi truck. I remember, I was like, what the fuck is this? Like some jalopy. So I get in this car and thinking to myself, oh my God, we're not even gonna make it home. This thing looks like it's not gonna make it around the block, let alone all the way back from downtown Phoenix to Glendale. I'm riding in the passenger seat. He's driving home. We get to my neighborhood. It's late. It's dark. I talked with my mom. I told her that, hey, this person's gonna drive me home. The senior leader said it's okay. And she says, all right, you know, that's fine. We turn into my neighborhood, and he passes the street that I lived on. I thought, well, that's kind of strange. So I notify him. I said, yeah, you missed the turn. It's that one that you just passed by. He goes, I know, but what do you think if, what if we just have a little fun? I'm thinking to myself, fun? I've been having fun all day. I'm exhausted. It's like, in my mind, it's like 11 o'clock at night. Who knows? It could have been 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock. And he goes, let me show you something. And I said, okay. What is he going to show me? I mean, I'm in my neighborhood. There isn't much I haven't seen around here. Frankly, I should be showing him around. He pulls over his white truck to the side of the road in the neighborhood, turns off the car, the lights are off, everything's dark, and he unzips his pants. I said, well, that's strange. Never had that experience in my life. And he goes, why don't you do the same? And I said, I didn't quite understand why I needed to do that. But this is a person who heard me, approved of me, and admired me, encouraged me. And so when he says, unzip your pants, I said, okay, whatever. And I unzipped my pants. In that moment, he began to give me oral sex. And that was absolutely the first time that things progressed from a simple hand on the shoulder to his mouth on my dick.
Do you remember how you felt when all of that was happening?
I do. I do remember, because this was a sensation that I had never experienced before in my life. I was in fifth grade. Nobody had ever put their mouth on my penis. And then I remember I became erect. I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. This is a very interesting feeling that I've never experienced in my entire life. And I would be lying to you if I said that I didn't ejaculate. So this person is blowing me. By the way, I'm in fifth grade, sitting in the passenger seat of his truck. He's blowing me. I never experienced this before in my life. I ejaculate. He swallows my load. It feels weird even calling it that, because I'm thinking of my fifth grade self. And that just shouldn't have to be verbiage like associated with myself as a fifth grader, but that's what happened. I was like, whoa, rocked my world. Never experienced that in my life. Well, then he says, okay, my turn. And he requests that I perform oral sex on him. I said, okay, well, you know, absolutely. You know, sure, that if that's what I have to do, because I, you approve of me, and if that's what you're requesting, I got to do it. Absolutely. I look at this dick, you know, his dick that's out of his pants. First thing I notice, I didn't know what this term was at the time, but I was like, my God, this is a weird looking dick. I mean, I've only seen mine, but I know what, I felt like I knew what a penis was supposed to look like. And this one, it just did not look right. Years later, I learned that he had an uncircumcised penis. And so I thought, that's weird, but I got past it. He continued to encourage me, and I ended up performing oral sex on him after this experience with me. It didn't take long where I was like, you know, I don't think I like this. This, it kind of smells. I remember telling him it kind of smells. And no fuck, it smelled. No shit. No wonder it smelled. We'd been out at a county fair showing fucking animals, not even animals, pygmy goats all day running around, you know, like, it was disgusting. And then you slap on an uncircumcised dick into the equation. It was a smelly situation. And so I did it for what I would probably amount to like a minute to 2 minutes total. And then I was like, yeah, I'm good. This is going to be a no from me. And he goes, okay. Then he drives me around the corner. I'm zipped up. There wasn't much to clean up because he had done the cleanup with his mouth. And I got dropped off at home.
Was any part of you scared at all about what had happened?
No. I wasn't scared because I trusted this person. This was a person who I looked up to. This was a person who I admired. This was a person who gave me a lot of fulfillment through his approval. So, no, in a way, I felt special.
Did it cross your mind at all that you wanted to tell your mom what happened?
That's a really good question. And I should note that also the guy who was doing this to me definitely made me swear to secrecy. He was like, this is just between you and me. But he didn't do it as a threat. He did it as it was almost like it was an exclusivity. Like, no one else gets to know about this. You're like, you're the only person. I'm the only person. Like, nobody is going to find out about this, you know? So it made me feel special. It should be noted that simultaneously, while this was occurring, the sexual abuse, I had been told by my mother, she'd finally told me that my stepfather was not actually my biological father. Let me just recap that real quick. When she got married to my dad, or excuse me, my stepdad, when I was four, she told me that he was my biological father. It was an easier story, made me have a father, all this stuff. Well, when I was in fifth grade, she told me, actually, just kidding, this is not your father. I think I might know who your dad is, blah, 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 but don't say a word. So the point in me sharing that is my mom had told me to keep this massive secret. Okay. So I'm in fifth grade and my mom is coming to me and saying, I know I told you that this person is your dad. He's not your dad, but you can't say a fucking word. Like, don't talk about it. I'll get to the bottom of it, but just know he's not your dad. I'll help you find him. So my mom had taught me to keep a secret, a massive secret. So when the 4-H leader comes to me and says, by the way, keep this a secret, no problem. I got to adhere to my mother's rules of keeping a secret. Of course, this is a no-brainer. Another leader in my life as the 4-H club leader, I'll keep this secret, you bet. So no, I didn't tell my mom because he told me not to.
What was 4-H club like after this night for you?
Horrific. It was horrific because I started, as much as that initial experience of getting a blowjob was a newfound sensation, it was not long lasting. You know, I didn't enjoy having to perform oral sex on him and his smelly dick. I didn't enjoy having to caress him in the way that he started to ask me to. And I started to realize, like, I don't know if it's wrong, but I'm a little uncomfortable. Like, no one else is doing this with me. And I get that this is special and things of that nature. So it wasn't long after that initial experience in the white truck on the side of the road in my neighborhood that I started to absolutely refuse and throw tantrums and cry and scream that I did not want to go. I do not want to go to any obligation. I would blame it on the Arizona summer heat. I would blame it on the fact that I don't like goats. I would blame it on the fact that I'm too busy with school. Like, I have my own shit to deal with at school. I'm not going to go fucking clip a goat's hoof. I got bigger and better fish to fry. This is stupid. My mother looked at that as me being a rebellious young kid who didn't want to adhere or fulfill their responsibilities or chores. You know, she saw this as, these are your animals. You need to go and take care of them. She had no idea really what was going on. And I couldn't convey to her, besides through these tantrums or crying fits and these excuses.
Did she make you continue to go to 4-H club?
To her greatest regret, she did. She saw me as, imagine a child who's throwing a tantrum. They don't want to take the trash out on a Tuesday afternoon. She viewed it as me not wanting to go take care of the animal or fulfill the responsibility that I had. And I know in her core that she wishes she saw or questioned or better understood what I was actually trying to communicate to her. And yeah, for the next year and a half, I still had to go to the 4-H club.
How did he treat you after that?
He had a power over me. He had basically, again, we're talking about fifth grade and a sixth grader, you know, through the time that I was being abused, and a 4-H club. But nevertheless, there were these opportunities to shine as a 4-H club member, you know, like, and get recognition and things of that nature. He held these things over me. So for instance, if I wanted to participate in an event at the 4-H that was maybe a little more prestigious than just a regular 4-H club event, he would, and I use that term prestigious very loosely, we're talking about showing goats. But anyway, he would hold it over my head, you know, like kind of like a tit for tat, you know, like you're not going to get this unless we maintain this. And so that's kind of how it continued. And that was from fifth grade to sixth grade. And then finally, I got out of it at seventh grade.
You had mentioned earlier that your camera phone was a big part of this story. How did that come into play?
I was very proud of the camera phone that I had. You know, it was pretty unusual for a fifth grader to have a cell phone, let alone this like kind of new, cool, trendy flip phone, whatever. So being the ostentatious type that I am, I definitely showed it off to everybody. I thought it made me cool, including the person who was abusing me. When he saw that I had this camera phone, he was like, oh, perfect. He started coaching me. He would text me late at night and he would say, take a picture like this. Take a picture of this. Position yourself like this. Send a picture. At the time, I was sharing a bedroom with my younger brother. We had dual beds in one room, and I would text back this person and say, you know, I don't know. My younger half brother is asleep and he might find it a bit weird if the flash is going off. Not a problem. This guy says, okay, is there a bathroom around? Go to the bathroom. So he would be coaching me on what to do, where to go, how to fulfill his request. So much so that he would then say, did you delete? Do you know how to delete? Prove to me you've deleted. And that's pretty much where the camera phone comes into play. He would coach me, tell me where to go, tell me how to take the picture, what he wanted to see, where to go, and then how to remove it. So he knew that he was at risk of being caught. So cover your tracks by making sure these pictures are deleted.
With the pictures, was he right out of the gate asking for inappropriate pictures, or was he like, oh, I'd love to see your face today?
That's a good question. I don't remember.
When he would text you, was it just about pictures and all of that, or would he have conversations with you?
He would have full-on conversations with me about anything and everything. It always started out with the goats. You know, he'd say he was going to check on the goat or whatever, and then it would transpire into something else. And one thing led to another. In addition to requesting pictures of myself, he then started coaching me to go onto my mom's computer. You know, we had a traditional desktop, and he would coach and teach me how to find porn. And he would say, watch this porn. I want to do this with you. Like, watch this. Then he would teach me how to delete the history, all while being in different places. But he would show me how to, or text me rather, how to find the porn, watch the same porn that he was watching, and then tell me how to clear the browsing history.
At this point, are you feeling like this is crossing a line and this is bad, or are you still under that impression that like this is a special bond that the two of you get to have?
I have no idea that this is wrong. I have no idea that this is crossing a boundary. And frankly, he's just showing me something that is another element of stimulation. I've never watched porn before. Just as I had never had a fucking blowjob before as a fifth grader, I'd never gone on to a computer and searched porn. This is a whole nother opportunity for me to experience something new that was not necessarily bad feeling. You know, I thought it was interesting.
Did anyone around you that you know of ever think that the relationship between the two of you was odd or out of place?
I'm so happy you asked that question, because the answer is yes. So I told you that this person was a leader of the 4-H group that I was in, and that is true. However, he was not the sole leader, right? He was kind of like the assistant coach or whatever. Like think of a baseball team. You have like your head coach, and then maybe you have a hitting coach or whatever. So he was an assistant to the main leader. And the main leader of this 4-H group that I was involved in, she said, you know, this is a bit strange. He spends a lot of time with this kid. And at one point, he referred to me as one of his slaves to the 4-H leader. And so she expressed concern. And then she actually went to my mom and the senior 4-H leader. She goes, hey, if you're okay with it, I'm okay with it. But I just think it's a bit strange the amount of time that this guy is spending with your son. And just want to run that by you. My mom is like, you know, I don't know. He seems to look up to him. They look happy. If you're cool with it, I'm cool with it. And she's okay. Just wanted to run that by you. So the 4-H leader of the entire group, she definitely had concerns. She also found used condoms on her property. She knew that this person who was abusing me had stolen her truck, had used her trailer, you know, like did a lot of bad things. And she knew, yet she allowed him to continue as a leader of this group.
How many times do you think that he sexually abused you?
I've been asked this question before, and I don't know the answer. It was because I believe him requesting pictures of me, him texting me sexual innuendos, him physically abusing me. I would guess over the course of 2.5 years, it was absolutely more than 100 times, if you encompass everything together.
I don't know if you'll have an answer to this question, but do you think if your mom or this other leader had come to you and said, is there something inappropriate going on? Do you think that you would have said yes?
Ace, that's a very good question. And the answer I wholeheartedly believe would be no. No, because I didn't know what was occurring was inappropriate. I didn't know. I thought this was normal. I thought this was what's supposed to happen. And I've heard some of your other guests, and they describe similar situations. I did not know that this was wrong. So unless somebody were to sit me down and describe what inappropriate contact looks like from an adult to a child, I wouldn't have known. And so I would have said no.
During this time, you were throwing these fits, as you call them, about not wanting to go to the 4-H club. Do you feel like there were other changes in your personality or your demeanor outside of the club?
I don't think so. I can't pinpoint something that would stand out to me as like, yeah, this was a defining or changing moment. But I think what started to happen is, you know, the abuse started when I was in fifth grade, then it's in sixth grade. And as I get to seventh grade, I'm starting to realize by then, okay, this is not appropriate behavior. So I know your last question said, if somebody would have asked you, would you have said, yes, there's inappropriate behavior? That is true. I would have said no. But as I got to the mindset of a seventh grader, people are starting to talk about sex more. People continue to, I was definitely bullied as, I don't even know if bully is the right word, but everybody called me gay all the time. And as I started to understand and get a better learning of what it means to be gay and what sex is, I was like, fuck, holy shit. Like, I think I had gay sex. This must mean I'm gay, but I don't feel gay. But I did have sex with this individual who's a man, so I must be gay. And that's kind of where the whole discovery process began.
Do you remember what you felt when you discovered that?
Yeah, I felt very angry and ashamed because basically I didn't really associate with a lot of other boys or young men as I was growing up, because I thought to myself, as I went through this experience with my abuser, I developed this understanding that, okay, if I'm hanging out with another guy or another boy, then this is what happens. And I don't particularly enjoy what's happening, so I'm just going to avoid the situation altogether. And plus, girls are more fun. I think they're funny. I have more fun with them. I'll be the first person to gossip. Like, you know, this is great. So I excommunicated myself from hanging out with other boys and young guys, and I just hung out with girls. They start to then call me gay, right? Like, look at this faggot. Look at this guy, you know, he's so gay. Shit, I don't feel that way. But then I start to learn what gay means. And then I realize, oh, fuck, they might be onto something here, because I did have this encounter with my abuser. And so at this moment, I realize, holy fucking shit, I am not going to say a word. Because if I disclose the fact that I had sexual interactions with this guy, then that will validate everybody's theory, story, and myth about me that I'm gay. And I don't feel that way, so I don't want to tell them. And I harbored the secret.
It's kind of the perfect storm to keep you quiet.
It was absolutely the perfect storm to keep me quiet, because I mentioned earlier, my mom told me to keep a secret. My abuser told me to keep a secret. Now I have the entire school accusing me, bullying me, and I will not ever mention this, because if I tell the secret, then I'm disobeying my abuser and also kind of my mom. You know, my mom told me that when you need to keep a secret, you need to keep a secret. So I'm disobeying them. And I just can't imagine what would have occurred if I would have said when I was in seventh grade, by the way, I was having sexual relations with this grown man while everybody was calling me gay. Like, that would have been like the KO, you know?
And I think too, your mindset at the time was that it was a sexual relationship, not that it was sexual abuse.
That's correct. And then, so first off, I realized, I was like, fuck, I had sex with this guy. I performed oral sex on him. He performed oral sex on me. At times, he performed anal sex on me. Didn't go so well, just so you know. And I'm thinking to myself, holy shit, I had sex with this person and he was a man. And therefore, all these other people are right. They're right. I'm fucking gay. Shit. Motherfucker. It wasn't until I got to high school when I started to have a better understanding of what consensual sex is. I did not have sex with this guy. I was molested. I was raped. I was abused. I believe that the definition between sex is two consensual adults above the age of 18. They decide, yes, let's have sex. What happened with me? That was not sex. However, I didn't understand that as a seventh grader. I thought that I was having sex with this person. I didn't know that I was being abused. So I thought that if I was having sex with this person, then I must be fucking gay.
How did you eventually leave the 4-H club?
I think I was in seventh grade and I just, frankly, I told my mom, I said, sell every goat that we have. I auction them. I don't care if they get turned into tacos. Get the fuck rid of them. I'm not doing it. Absolutely not. You're not doing it anymore. I'm not doing it. I'm too old for this shit. This is for elementary kids. I don't want to do it. And at that point, she finally let me go.
Would he still text you after you left the club?
He shamed me. Like he sent so many shameful text messages as, shame on you, you know, shame, shame, shame. And I said, okay, go fuck yourself. I don't care. I remember as a child, I loved this computer game called The Sims. And I would play The Sims all the time, every day after school. And honestly, looking back, it's like, it makes sense because The Sims is building this life of imaginary situations. And so when I got into The Sims, I got to be able to like create a household, happy family. Like this is, I'm having an out of body experience. Like, oh, look at how great these people are having it. This motherfucker would text me and be like, you're so pathetic. I can't believe that you would pick a video game over caring for your animals. And I'd be like, you know, I would probably have, if I were now, I'd say, suck my dick, but Lord knows I'm not going to give him that opportunity. So I'd be like, fuck you. You know, like, I don't care. And that's kind of when it all stopped. But when I turned 18, I reached out to him again. Because at this point, I had realized this was not normal. This was absolutely abuse. And so when I was 18, I reached out to him again.
And what did you say?
I sent him a message on Facebook. And I said, hey, I've been thinking a lot about our past. I might be gay, but there's only one way to confirm. Do you mind coming to meet up? I was living in Glendale at the time. I was in a rental house. I was in college. And I knew that if I lured him, and if I said those things, I just felt like there would be a immediate response is yes. So I went to, believe it or not, a Radio Shack. I purchased a tape recorder and tapes to be recorded on and put them in my pocket. I coordinated an event. I invited him over and he knocks on the door. And my goal of this encounter is to maintain control of the situation and start talking about what occurred and then go to the police. When he approached my front door and I opened it, the weirdest thing for me was that I was taller than him. I'm 6 foot tall. And when I opened the door and I saw that he, if I had to guess, is like 5'6 or 5'7, I was like, what the fuck? Like, he doesn't have control over me anymore. Like, I'm not a physical person, but like, if I needed to, I feel pretty good about this ratio. And that was weird. So I invite him in. We're starting having a chat, and I had a dog at the time, and this dog was going crazy. I'm like, he is the most friendly dog you could ever meet in your entire life, but not to this person. I'm literally pulling him back, trying to prevent my dog from biting him. And I just think that's kind of interesting because my dog knew that this was not normal. So I put my dog, I drag him by his collar and I put him out back and I start chatting with this guy. and we're recounting and we're thinking about everything that occurred when I was a child. And he's sitting down at my kitchen table in the dining room. And all of a sudden, a bottle of lube falls out of his pocket. And in that moment, I thought, oh shit, like, I'm not prepared for this. I'm not, this is too dangerous. Like, I don't want to be in this situation. And so I kind of freaked out and I said, hey, I was in a relationship with them. I said, hey, my girlfriend just texted me at the time. You got to go. Like, you have to leave. And I ushered him out the door. Then I took the tape recorder, I smashed it with the hammer, and I threw it in the trash. Let my dog back in, and I said, I'm never doing this again.
We don't talk enough about the sexual abuse that happens to boys. It is estimated, and I say estimated because a lot of sexual abuse goes unreported, and we can't really know for certain how often it is happening, but it is estimated that 82% of all child sexual abuse victims are female, and that number is huge. But it doesn't mean that we can forget about the other 18%. So I'm really thankful to this guy for coming forward with his story, because it's not a story I think that we get to hear the perspective of as much. And because of that, I am absolutely going to jump up on my soapbox for a minute. And if you don't want to hear what I have to say, that's fine. And I also know that I've talked about this before, but I don't remember where I talked about it. So I'm just saying it again. Toxic masculinity is not about Harry Styles wearing women's clothes. I mean, if that makes you mad, then you have bigger issues you need to work through. Toxic masculinity is this belief that starts at a very young age with boys. And society tells young boys that they need to be tough and that emotion is a sign of weakness. I think that we should be encouraging, as a society, people to not be afraid of emotions. Because that is how trauma turns into secrecy. And that is why so many people are walking around still wounded by the things that happened to them when they were young. We have to talk about our feelings. And you are not weak for it. You're really fucking brave. That is literally the entire purpose of this podcast. To give people a place to let it out, but also to let others know that it's okay to do the same. So I want to stand here and I want to speak to you, whoever you may be, whoever is out there who is suffering, who is struggling with something that they have not talked about yet. And I just want you to know that I am sorry for your suffering in silence. I am sorry for what has happened to you. And I hope so badly one day that you can heal from those dark times. And I want to let you know that you don't have to be afraid to speak up. I will be back next week with part 2 of this episode. And spoiler alert, I absolutely cried. Thank you guys for listening. I will see all of you next week.
Everybody has a secret.